Game on, weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
And a big thank you to the two Johnnies for enjoying themselves at Crow Park and driving us through this afternoon. It is Friday, the 9th of September. I'm Shane Dawson, and you are listening to Game On. Coming up this evening, Vera Powell's playoff planning is underway. We'll hear from the Irish manager as Ireland learn their opponents in the next step to the FIFA World Cup. Meanwhile, is sport on or off across the water this weekend? We'll get the latest on a confusing day for sport in Britain and their administrators. However, closer to home, it is a busy night in the League of Ireland. Paul Curry is in studio to preview that one, and we'll be up live to Ryan McBride Brandywell ahead of tonight's televised game on RT between Derry City and Bohemian Football Club. Plus, Jane Mangan will be along ahead of Champions Weekend in racing, and if that wasn't enough, well, Stephen Higgins has the lowdown on the final weekend of tennis's US Open. As always, if you want to get in touch in this Friday evening, well, do so. Drop us a text on 51552 or tweet us at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Good evening. It is great to have your company on this Friday evening. Good evening, Paul Curry. How are you, sir?
Very good, Shane. Out in Tala last night. Got the Friday feeling. Looking forward to the weekend.
Happy days. Great to hear. Great to hear. So, let's rattle through our news headlines before we get into the nuts and bolts of this evening's show. And some good news on the rugby front, because Ireland men's team are through to the quarterfinals of the Rugby World Cup Sevens, courtesy of an excellent 17-5 victory against England this afternoon, having seen off Portugal 24-0 in the opening game in Cape Town. Ireland shifted up a gear to claim a dominant win over the 2013 and 2018 finalists. Ireland will face host South Africa or Chile in Saturday's quarterfinal, which kicks off at precisely 9:33 p.m. Irish time. South Africa face Chile in Friday's final match at 6:03 p.m. I think I'm missing a beat there as the weather 3 minutes. But however, women's side of things, Amy Lee Murphy Crowe crossed for two tries as Ireland ground out a 24-12 victory over Brazil in their Rugby World Cup Sevens opener. The women's side will face New Zealand or Colombia in Saturday's quarterfinals, would kick off at 7:05 Irish time. A match you can watch live on the RT player. In fact, you can see all of the Rugby World Cup Sevens on the RT player, and the finals will be live on RT2 television on Sunday from 7 p.m. In soccer news, we will be getting to the Republic of Ireland women's draw, but some team news. The women's national team manager Vera Powell must plan for a very tough World Cup playoff showdown without injured midfield duo Megan Connolly and Ruisha Littlejohn. Unfortunately, we'll have more on that draw with Paul Curry and Rebecca Cray very shortly. And finally, when we're mentioning is sport on or off, well, the BMW PGA Championship will resume tomorrow, following the postponement of play after the death of Britain's Queen. Shane Lowry was just two shots off joint leaders Tommy Fleetwood, Andy Sullivan and Victor Hovland, sharing the clubhouse lead on 6 under par when play was suspended. Rory McIlroy was a further two shots back after the opening round, which was suspended, as I mentioned, following the death of Britain's Queen. With 30 players out on the course, the course and practice facilities are closed today, but play will restart at 6:40 a.m. tomorrow, with the tournament reduced to 54 holes, which is interesting enough given the uproar about the LIV golfers there. So 54 holes in the BMW PGA Championship, and there'll be a 2 minute period of silence that will be held at 9:50 a.m. on Saturday. One other mention for Kieran McGeehan, because we had live commentary of Kieran McGeehan's Diamond League final at the 1500 metres race yesterday. She came second, an unbelievable finish for Kira, really an absolute stacked final full of the world's best athlete. So really, really good race from Kira, and we can hear from Kira McGeehan herself now.
It was a tactical race, it wasn't fast by any means, but with a Diamond League final it's never going to be. So yeah, put myself out there in a competitive position, and I'm delighted to come home with silver. Oh my goodness, it's been the week of my dreams to run 3:56, now to get in the Diamond League final and come second. What more could I ask for?
And you've got another race on Sunday, I believe.
Yes, flying to New York for the 5th Avenue Mile. So I'm really looking forward to finishing up the season there and then heading home for a holiday.
I mean, have you done road miles before?
Yes, I've raced 5th Ave a couple of times. So I'm looking forward to going back. I've actually positioned in the top three previously. They gave me the nicest tricolour I ever had and I took it home. So I'm hoping to add to that collection.
Happy days. Well, massive congratulations to Ciara McGeehan, an absolute superstar, breaking the national record not too long ago and adding a second place finish there, as I mentioned. Such quality competition in that race. So very well done to Portaferry's Ciara McGeehan. Paul Corry, we are going to chat Republic of Ireland football now. And I mentioned Rebecca Cray is going to be on the line as well. But also Fergal Brennan joins us as well. So we've a stacked audience and it's brilliant. Brilliant to see. Because the Republic of Ireland are going to play the winners of Scotland or Austria away from home in their 2023 World Cup playoff. Vera Powell's side were one of the top three ranked sides and given a bye to the second round along with Switzerland and Iceland. So regardless of the result from the round one playoff, Ireland, who are ranked 27th in the world, will be on the road against a team ranked above them in the world rankings, with Scotland sitting in 23rd, three spots above Austria in 26th. So the second round playoff will take place on Tuesday, October 11th. So, and I'm told actually earlier, obviously we can't predict if it's Scotland or Austria, but flights to Austria, only £30 at the moment. So if you're interested, I mean, it's only £30 if you want to take a gamble. But listen, before we get the thoughts of Rebecca from of Paul and indeed Fergal Brennan, let's hear from the Republic of Ireland manager Vera Powell.
It's a tough one, eh? It's a very tough draw. Both Scotland and Austria are really good teams. And Austria in the Euros has impressed me hugely. I've done one of their games for RTE, and they are well organized, physically strong, a few extremely good, talented players. A strong striker, a solid defence. So if they get through, it will be very, very difficult. But the same like Scotland. We all know how much experience they have, how dynamic they play with players like Kim Little in it. And we have huge respect for them. So it could have been better, but We have to deal with it. We have to go for it. And we will. We will be ready on the 11th of October.
Will you plan to go and see their first leg game yourself in person?
Yeah, in the meanwhile, we've organized it already. It's Conor Woods and Danny O'Leary who are going out. We sent two scouts. One will do Scotland, one will do Austria. And the one that goes through will deliver the analysis the next morning in the hotel to us.
In a way, could it have been, when you look at the seeds, Switzerland and Iceland, would you like one of them to lose so that it may make an easier path for you to New Zealand?
Yeah, of course. Switzerland has the best draw, I think, with the winner of Wales, Bosnia-Herzegovina, as their opponent. But also for them, it could go the other way around. Yeah? Wales could do the job. I think Iceland has the toughest one. But yeah, if they lose points and we would be able to somehow win, then you're straight through to the World Cup. That would be amazing and fantastic, of course.
What are the chances of the players who missed out the last time? Megan Connolly, perhaps in particular, Niamh Fahey, Ruaisha Littlejohn being fit for next month?
Yeah, we hope Niamh Fahey is fit, but Ruaisha and Megan are ruled out already.
Okay, best of luck to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that was Vera Powell chatting to RTÉ soccer correspondent Tony O'Donoghue a little bit earlier on after the draw. So just to confirm there, Ireland will play the winners of Scotland or Austria. Switzerland, as Vera Powell alluded to there, will face the winners of Wales or Bosnia-Herzegovina. And Iceland will face the winners of Portugal or Belgium. Rebecca Cray, if I come to you first, I suppose it's middle of the ground. We probably would have preferred to face Wales or Bosnia, probably wanted to avoid Portugal or Belgium. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, more or less. I think personally, I was thinking that down the route of Wales or Bosnia. But in saying that, look, I think the team have a great spirit about them. They've come a long way since, you know, what, 2-3 years ago. So I think it's just going to be a case of going out and trying our best. I think, look, I'd tip us just for the fact that we've been doing so well and there's been a great kind of fighting spirit, you know, across the games, especially the last two. But look, it is going to be a tough draw and away from home as well, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, away from home. Scotland and Austria enjoyed similar records, Rebecca, during their qualifying campaigns, with 16 points after their results were weighted out. Austria came from a 6-team group and had two of their results ignored in the playoff table and finished second to England, while Scotland were runners-up to Spain in their group. In terms of what Ireland would expect in terms of the threat, the style of football that both Scotland and Austria play, what should we expect?
Yeah, I think Austria are typically, you know, European, and looking at Scotland, I think it'll be quite similar to Ireland. And there'll be a lot of, I suppose, players that a lot of the girls across the board will be, you know, familiar with as well. They'll be quite tough in Scotland, you know, they'll be quite physical. And again, quite similar to Ireland. Austria, a bit more free-flown, a bit more direct. But look, again, it's something that I know the girls will be well up for. And I'm really looking forward to it, and hopefully we can come out the other side of it.
Absolutely. Now, Fergal, not to steal your limelight, because you excellently explained this last time out on Game On. So just to recap for our listeners who may have missed it during the week. So the two playoff winners with the highest ranking qualify automatically for the World Cup, while the remaining playoff winner will compete in the Inter-Confederation Playoffs. Ireland will qualify automatically if they beat the winners of Austria and Scotland, and one of Iceland and Switzerland lose their second round matches. So given the nature of these convoluted qualifying rules, a win for Ireland coupled in normal or extra time with either Iceland and Switzerland winning their games on penalties would also be enough to see Ireland progress automatically. My question to you, Fergal, really is, obviously we all want Ireland to qualify automatically and hopefully Iceland or Switzerland slip up. However, if Ireland get into these inter-confederation playoffs in New Zealand, like, I pose this question again, Journey, with respect, you would favour ourselves?
You would, particularly in terms of the ranking of the other teams that are involved. As I mentioned earlier in the week, Ireland would be the highest FIFA-ranked side that would be going in to the Inter-Confederation Playoffs, but it would still be tricky. It's still a long, old trip out to New Zealand to play these games, and it still would be extra games and extra pressure placed on Vera Powell and the players to get to the World Cup. The most straightforward and hopefully the outcome of the playoff matches is a win that gets us through and into the World Cup, but that idea of having to kind of schlep all the way out to New Zealand to play these games is not really something that they'll be planning for. It is a possibility. I definitely think it'll be a really disappointing thing to then have to G the players back up and send them out there to do that. But I just think that we have to look at this from the perspective of one game at a time. Keep an eye on the Scotland-Austria game first out, and then prepare for that big one on the 11th. And if there is the need for that Inter-Confederation place, then so be it. But fingers crossed, it's not the case.
Yeah, no, certainly. Paul, Rebecca alluded to it there in terms of how much this team has grown recently. I mean, Ireland last played Scotland back in 2017 in a friendly, which we lost 1-0, while the most recent encounter with Austria was a 2-0 defeat in 2015. I mean, that's nearly a lifetime ago. How much have Ireland improved since then? Overall, I mean, not just the players, the overall general setup.
Yeah, I think Vera Powell deserves a lot of credit. One, for the performances, but two, for the results. And I think if you look back, Shane, on the most recent qualifying campaign that we've come through, you know, if we were to have drawn either Finland or Sweden in this playoff campaign, you'd probably be saying we're as good as out before we began. But the points and the results against Finland in particular, you know, we won home and away in those games. There's got to be a confidence and a belief about the group that, irrespective of whether it's Austria or whether it's Scotland, we have more than a fighting chance in those games. And I think the fact that we're only preparing for one match is a huge advantage.
Yeah.
Like, for the others, you know, they're not even thinking about playing Ireland in the second leg. They have to fully focus energy and tactics and formations for their first opposition. So that leaves us in a really good position, because the mental drain that will take out of those teams will certainly take its toll when it comes around to the Ireland fixture. So we've got a massive chance, Shane. I just think when you look at the trajectory of the squad and the confidence and the belief of some of the players and the progress that we've made over the last 12, 18 months in particular, I can't see any reason why we can't go into those fixtures with full confidence. Like, particularly if you look at the group as well, our away form is actually better than our home form. Their style of football potentially suits soaking up pressure and then using the likes of Denise O'Sullivan and Katie McCabe to hit on the counter-attack. So I think we've got a really good chance. I think naturally enough, like, I looked at it and thought, oh, we're playing Austria. But that's maybe doing a bit of disservice to Scotland. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But, you know, irrespective of what happens, qualifying campaign was amazing. everybody's just got their fingers crossed and they qualify for the final tournament.
For sure. Rebecca, Paul used the phrase there, on the right trajectory. I mean, how far can this group go and this team go? Because they've grown so much already, and it seems like they're just continuously improving.
Yeah, most definitely. Like, I think I personally would have every faith in them to go all the way. You know, I think it is just a case of taking it game by game. I know we were trying to figure out the route to playoffs. That's the approach we were taking because it was so confusing. But I know, you know, having spoken to some of the girls and obviously being friends with them, they're quite confident in how they've done and how they're, you know, they're going. And I think they'll just be looking to this game as just another game and focusing on ourselves, which is the best approach to take, I suppose. And I think they'll take either team at this stage, you know, because I don't think anyone really expected, you know, the team to get this far, to get out of the group. So look, it's fantastic, and it's only going to do great things for the country and give it a little boost, and obviously for women's football across the board. But look, hopefully, you know, come October we'll be having a different conversation, hopefully celebrating.
Absolutely. For women's football across the board, Rebecca, before I let you go, Paul and Fergal, you're going to stick around because we've plenty more to chat about. You mentioned women's football across the board. The mighty Whitehall Rangers, your beloved Whitehall Rangers that you're now, I know you're a former Shelburne player, but you're fighting it out in the Eastern Women's Football League at the moment, and a potential quadruple on the cards.
Yes. Here we got, two big games next week.
I think I'm right in saying you've Terenure twice next week, so Cup semi-final on Monday. You have them in the league on Wednesday, and then a final against John Bosco on Sunday.
That's right, yeah. So we've won trophy in the bag already. So we've potentially, another three more to go. So hopefully now, you know, next week, I think that's the big one, you know, against Terenure. They're right behind us as St. Pat's there. So, yeah, all systems go come next week, and hopefully you'll be chatting to me after, and we'll have a drink.
Happy days, yeah. We must get a Whitehall Rangers special. And of course, there's a load of Definitely. Women's National League football on. Shelburne P-Mount is on the TG Car tomorrow as well for anyone looking for a fix of football over the weekend. Rebecca Cray, thank you very much for joining us. As I mentioned, Paul and Fergal are going to stick around because we're going to review European action. But before we do, Fergal Brennan, there is no Premier League football this weekend. However, there is cricket, there's rugby, I think horse racing is cancelled until Sunday perhaps, but the general consensus here is seemingly that the Premier League football and the Football League have perhaps jumped the gun in postponing these fixtures.
Yeah, that does seem to be a little bit of the overriding feeling coming out of this, certainly speaking to colleagues and people involved with the clubs in terms of media and logistics and all those types of things. I think the Premier League and the EFL were anticipating the other major sports in terms of their games and activities this weekend to follow suit. And yeah, I think there is a bit of a sense of jumping the gun. Obviously, the stance on taking the weekend off as a mark of respect, it depends on your stance on the news that has broken in the last 24-48 hours, but I think there is probably a bit more frustration than the Premier League and the EFL anticipated. I think they were expecting just a unified, okay, let's move on, but there's actually been a little bit of a sustained rail against it in the idea that there could have been a minute silence or some other mark of respect as there was during the Europa League games last night. But that hasn't been the decision. There's no games this weekend, and there's the potential, depending on how things unfold, that there's no Premier League games next weekend. That won't be decided probably until midweek next week. But there is the very, very strong likelihood is no Premier League football now until October after the international break. But obviously it's an evolving situation, and we just have to keep an eye on it.
Very much an evolving situation, Paul. And I mean, there's already going to be fixture headaches with the World Cup, not too far away as well. Miguel Delaney actually had an excellent piece in the English Independent, independent.co.uk, I was reading earlier, and he mentioned really just in terms of the workers who are going to be affected. I mean, food waste, travel costs, both home and abroad, and like children's football is stopped as well. And even one of Miguel's sources said, these aren't Victorian times, you can't treat sport like that anymore. However, in 1952, when Britain's King George VI died, football continued. In 1936, when Britain's King George V died, football continued. So the Football Supporters Association have themselves issued a statement saying it was an opportunity missed for football to pay its own special tributes. And we see that even with Remembrance Sunday and the poppies and everything. People will want to go, and rally together and show their respects in their own way, if you're that way inclined.
Yeah, 100%. And I just find it bizarre that the Premier League and the Championship and the English Football League were the first ones to make the call and make the decision, if you take into consideration the level of congestion that the top sides have between now and the World Cup. They're playing pretty much every midweek, and particularly the sides involved in Europe. And where they fit in these fixtures in the football calendar, I do not know. They're probably going to have to extend the season out at this rate, Shane, because it's going to be absolute mayhem when the World Cup comes back round. They'll probably have to continue playing midweek games, and you'll then start hearing conversations about player welfare that the managers seem to tap into quite a bit, which is understandable because you're asking a hell of a lot of players on a consistent basis with three games in a week. So I'm just surprised. I'm surprised they were the first ones to do it now that cricket and rugby union and so on are continuing on with their fixtures. So that surprises me. At the same time, I understand it, but Miguel's points are very valid too.
Yeah, no, bang on. I think it's today that all fixtures are stopped. I know even up in the north of Ireland, the Northern Irish Premier League is stopped for today as well. Scottish football is stopped for the weekend as well. So it seems to just be association football, which is, yeah, as you mentioned there. And I think as Miguel, I feel like we're just reading out Miguel's article, but a very factual point, the Department of Culture, Sport and Media issued new guidance on national mourning and specifically stated there's no obligation to cancel or postpone events and sporting fixtures. This is at the discretion of individual organisations. So, I mean, this was known through planning meetings for years, and by all accounts, Fergal, this was a 20-minute meeting. So it seemed to like, will we? Yes. And it's all just been decided.
Yeah, that does seem to be the noise coming out of the Premier League. And I think they, as you say, jumped the gun slightly, or certainly misjudged the situation, thinking that this was going to be a universal thing right the way across sport. And I think the backlash, and obviously you've mentioned there the comments from Miguel Delaney and various other people, it has changed perceptions over whether or not this is the right decision. And particularly, as you mentioned, in relation to people that work within football that could be losing out in terms of their wages and work and various other things. So it has split opinion. The decision has been made, but it kind of lumps on these games, whether they are going to be jammed in somewhere between now and the World Cup, whether it's going to be fitted in at some stage in the new year, or potentially, as you guys mentioned, the season being extended again, still remains to be seen. But I think as we're talking now, there is a very real chance that next weekend's could also be postponed or cancelled in relation to the organisation surrounding the state funeral that is in the works as it stands. And the Champions League has pretty much got every midweek sewn up between here and the start of the World Cup. So where these games get fitted, I don't really know as it stands. But the Premier League, with the broadcast commitments that they have, they will find a way to shove them in somewhere.
You mentioned the Champions League. There is newspaper speculation that the Aviva Stadium Dublin could host English clubs as well, apparently. So I know Liverpool are playing Ajax. I know Rangers are playing in Ibrox as well. So if Champions League matches get postponed and they have to come over to Dublin, who knows? Who knows? Mere speculation. Paul Corrie, no Premier League football, but there is loads of League of Ireland football that we will be previewing in due course. And that brings us on nicely to review European football, because Shamrock Rovers, of course, were in action last night in Tallaght Stadium. They drew 0-0 with Djurgårdens. And Rovers earning more prize money for drawing one game of football last night against Djurgårdens, €166,000, than they will win if they win the league title this season, which is €110,000. So there's a few facts and figures for you. Paul, you watched the match. How did Rovers fare?
Yeah, they did quite well, Shane. I don't think it's the best performance I've seen from Rovers in Europe this season, but maybe there was a bit of maybe a bit of nervousness about the squad, particularly now that we're in the group stages, and obviously now there's points at stake. But they performed quite well, I thought. Across the back, they were pretty strong. Sean Hoare had to go off quite early, and Daniel Cleary came on. Bar the mistake he made,
he gave away a goal.
He very nearly gave away a goal, but bar that, he was pretty solid throughout the game. Lee Grace was absolutely excellent, and it was quite an even battle in the midfield, and there wasn't a huge amount of chances over the course of the 90 minutes. And Djurgården maybe seemed happy enough to come to Tallaght and take a point, and I don't think Rovers would be all too disappointed either. But on another night, they could have got three, Shane. They really could have got three. I was in here speaking the other night, and I was saying, you know, whether or not they would go with Jack Byrne. It was interesting to see he was left on the bench. Gaffney as well.
Is that maybe a fitness thing, though, perhaps?
Maybe, but he started against Bowes in Dalymount the week before. Yeah. So even if you were only to get 60 minutes out of him, he's the most creative player. They certainly looked like they just lacked a bit of a spark in the final third. Now, young Farazai did quite well with the ball. And he's very tidy, but maybe doesn't have the same sort of creativity of a Burke or a Jack Byrne. And Rory Gaffney, who's been arguably their best player all season, potentially wasn't fit enough to start the game. So I think when you put it all together, the fact that it's the first game of the group, it puts them in a good position going forward, that if they were to pick up more points, there's every chance that they could still be involved come maybe round 4, 5 and 6. But I said at the beginning of the group campaign, 4 or 5 points would be a very good return, and they've got one of them on the board already. So it'll be interesting to see how the group evolves. Molde drew with Genk, so everybody's sitting on 1 point at this moment.
You mentioned Justin Farazai there. The commentary team were comparing him to Pablo Dybala, and Graham Gartland compared him to Rui Costa, and I felt so old because he had to explain who Rui Costa was. He's like, for any younger listener, I was like, oh god,
no pressure either.
Oh, like, yeah, exactly. I think it was all because he wears the socks like halfway down his legs. I was like, fair enough. We will be chatting more about Rovers. They play Harps on Sunday evening.
I wonder, does Gart have a sell-on clause in him or something?
Yeah,
like that.
Compared it to Costa. We will be chatting Rovers, but Fergal Brennan, Liverpool Football Club, are in crisis.
Yeah, strangely, given the situation for this weekend, they might actually welcome a bit of a break and a bit of extra training, because midweek was a disaster away at Napoli, and they just, for whatever reason, they can't seem to get that little bit of zip and that little bit of confidence back within them. And I think Jurgen Klopp's comments after the game against Napoli the other night were telling. He said that they need to reinvent themselves, and I think that's a lot of the feeling within Liverpool fans at the moment, that they don't want absolute seismic change, or Klopp to leave, or certain players to leave, but they need to react to the situation that they've effectively been doing things the same way pretty consistently for the last 3 years. And when it works, it works, and it works to great effect. But when it doesn't, and your plan B doesn't really click into gear in the way that, say, a Manchester City have 3, 4, 5 different ways of doing things, it can be frustrating. And I still think one of the big issues for them is, where does Darwin Nunez fit in to the plans this season? He will score goals for them, he is a threat, but he doesn't really seem to fit into the mould of what we expect from a Liverpool forward player. If you compare that with Man City and Erling Haaland, he's hit the ground running, but Haaland's move to Manchester City has been in the works for probably the best part of 2 years. They've been planning for him, almost setting up in training for his arrival. Whereas Darwin Nunez has come in on the back of a really good season with Benfica, played well against Liverpool last season, and he seems to be a long way behind in that sense of Liverpool finding out his strengths and how they can play to it, all in the middle of them having a bit of a crisis at the moment. So I do think it's going to be a little bit of a rocky road ahead, but given the quality that they've got, given the experience that Klopp has got, I wouldn't be talking of the demise of Liverpool Football Club just yet, but they need some way to formulate a reaction, and pretty soon as well.
I would like to put on record for any Liverpool fans listening that Liverpool in crisis was completely tongue-in-cheek. A good team that we're on the cusp of a quadruple doesn't become a bad team overnight. However, Paul, I do have to ask the question, when does the pressure start coming on Jurgen Klopp? I mean, given the success that he's had, he deserves to rebuild, but I mean, we've seen it with Thomas Tuchel.
Oh, surely not. Surely not, Shane. I mean, he's achieved so much at that football club, and he's brought them on so much, and he's obviously got a Champions League and a Premier League trophy behind him as well. And I mean, people will be quick to point out that he's not working with the same sort of budgets that Pep Guardiola is at Man City, and any sort of recruitment he's had to do is maybe off the back of selling other players as well. So I know they spent big on Van Dijk and Alisson. That was maybe in the formation of the squad, but I
modern
can't see
football, Paul. Modern football.
Surely not. No way. He has too much respect with the owners, too much respect with the players, but there is certainly something missing or something lacking at this moment in time. I just wonder, you know, it's an intense and it's a draining way to play football, the energy levels that are expected every single week. And I think when you look at the likes of Andy Robertson, he looks tired. Even Trent at times, he looks tired in his defending in particular. And I wonder, has it just taken its toll on them? And looking at them thus far in the season, it's hard to see how they will put pressure on Man City, particularly in the Premier League Cup runs, and focus on the cups would probably make more sense, and then look to recruit and go again next season with the likes of maybe a Jude Bellingham through to, coming through the door. But at this moment in time, Shane, they do look jaded, but there's certainly any signs of Jurgen Klopp coming under pressure as far as I can see it.
No, I don't see it either, but Tuchel, I suppose, came at me a bit of a shock as well, and anything can happen in this money world of modern football. Fergal, in the UEFA Europa League, Manchester United were frustrated by Real Sociedad losing on a bit of a controversial call, and Arsenal didn't look at their best, but they got over the line away to FC Zurich. So I suppose, starting with Manchester United, we talk about Liverpool can't become a bad team overnight. Can Man United become a good team overnight? Have we lost Fergal? Possibly so. Paul Curry, I'll pose that exact same question to you. Man United frustrated by Real Sociedad. What did you make of their overall performance? I suppose it's frustrating when there is such a controversial call that you lose a match on.
Yeah, there is. And he obviously rung the changes last night. The likes of Maguire won't do his confidence much good, and maybe a bit of a change in setup with Ronaldo playing through the middle. But I think it maybe goes back, Shane, to the style of play that they have been playing over recent weeks. If you look how they set up against the likes of Arsenal, against Liverpool, it was very much to soak up the pressure and hit on the counter-attack. And I'm not sure they have the players to maybe be extremely open and play a really expansive game. I think when they do that, they leave gaps, and I only caught highlights of the Sociedad game last night, but you could see elements of that. And then in the final third, I'm not sure they really have the creativity to go and open teams up. Keeping the ball, retaining possession, being patient and biding your time and trying to open teams up is completely different than going on the counter-attack. Mm. Like, it really is. When you have the legs of Rashford and Sancho, where you can maybe put a ball in behind and run onto it and eliminate the high line of an Arsenal or Liverpool, it's easier to get at teams. I'm just not sure they're quite there with regards to building up, going through the thirds and breaking teams down, and they failed to score last night. That doesn't really surprise me. So it's work in progress for Erik ten Hag. There's certainly improvement that needs to happen there. There's probably another two or three players that he could push out the door in the next transfer window if he could get the right bodies in. So it's still a watch this space for Manchester United. They're certainly not anywhere near the top teams in the Premier League.
And it was a bit of a frustrating night for Casemiro as well. My final question on this European review, I have to go to yourself, Paul, because Spurs looked good against 10-man Marseille. And for our listeners, just to prove that we just don't have an on-air relationship, I did get a Richarlison gif off you because you were proved right. The man came good, albeit against 10-man Marseille.
Yeah, what was the other game that we had on that night?
Liverpool. Yeah, I wasn't going to hang you out to dry.
I said Liverpool get a point at a minimum, I think I said. So at least the Richarlison one came in. But yeah, no, I think they've more of a threat when they play with Kane, Son, and Richarlison in the front three. It'd be interesting to see how he maybe blends it together with Richarlison and Kane, because Richarlison tends to play as the nine and play through the middle and really centre himself in the 6-yard box, whereas both those headers came from the other night. And where Harry Kane maybe drops in a little deeper, I'm not too sure, but for me he has to be in the team because he'll pop up with important goals like that. He proved it at Everton when he didn't have anywhere near the quality of player around him that he will do at Tottenham. So yeah, it was his first goals in the Tottenham shirt. He had one disallowed against Fulham last week. He also hit the post. It's definitely progress in him. There's progress in Spurs at this moment in time, Shane. They're kind of grinding and grafting results. The performances aren't really there, but when you've got a manager like Antonio Conte, you'd expect that both will come further down the line.
Absolutely. Well, they'll have plenty of time to work on their tactics and work on training because, as we mentioned, no Premier League fixtures this weekend. Who knows if there are going to be Premier League fixtures next weekend, but there are plenty of League of Ireland fixtures this evening, of which myself and Paul Curry will go through in a few moments' time. So stick with us here in Game On 2FM.
RTE 2FM.
Game On
Football.
Now, you are very welcome back to Game On this Friday evening. It is great to have your company. I'm delighted to still be in the company of Paul Curry, and Jane Mangan will be joining us very shortly to chat horse racing, and we have Stephen Higgins as well to come on US Open tennis. However, Paul Curry, the live Orty television game this evening is Derry City versus Bohemians, a match that is going on. Derry City had a very triumphant Game On post tweeting that they had talks with their Derry City officials and the game goes ahead. There was some consideration for the match being off given Derry's geographical location. However, Derry will be hoping to take advantage of the 2-day head start on league leaders Shamrock Rovers on the pitch with a win over Bohemians. And I suppose if we want a title battle, Derry have to win. Is that fair to say? Or
yeah, I think it is very fair to say, Shane. It's quite a big game for both teams, and maybe for different reasons. For Derry, like, they absolutely have to keep the foot down on the accelerator while Rovers remain in Europe. Rovers have actually coughed up a couple of points off the back of European fixtures, so albeit they're quite a bit talent wise and performance wise ahead of Dundalk and Derry, there is still a chance that they could slip up. And Derry have been unbeaten in the league since May, but have drawn a number of games, need to start turning some of those draws into wins. I think what's massive for Derry is the return of Michael Duffy over the last number of weeks, and I could see him causing Bowes problems tonight. And one to look out for, particularly now it's on the telly, is Diallo. The addition of him into that Derry team, he looks a proper player. He's come through the Manchester City Academy.
I saw him in Talk actually, and yeah, he was smashing.
Very good, and the reports are that he's super on the ball, probably similar type mould to Will Patching with how he manipulates the ball, controls the ball. So really exciting team. It'll actually be a really good watch on the box tonight. And like we mentioned, Derry have to win. You know, Rory Higgins has put together a really good squad. If you look at their 11 on paper, it's as good as anything else that's out there, but they have to be more consistent, Shane. They went through a really rough patch early on in the season. If they're looking to mount any challenge against Shamrock Rovers, they really do need to win tonight. And then for Bowes, it's probably on the other end of the spectrum. They're in a bit of a rebuilding phase with Keith Long going out the door. Really good performance last week. Perfect fixture. It absolutely was. But Derek Penders is certainly thrown his name into the ring here to take over at Bohemians. And if he was to win tonight off the back of beating Shamrock Rovers last week, certainly.
Any rumours for me, Paul?
Not that I'm aware of. But I think last week, Shane, he got them back to basics. They're leaking goals way too often this season. And Derek Pender, by nature and as a player, was a really sort of diligent right back, really disciplined. And you could see that in their performance last week. I think tonight's going to be too much of a stretch for them. I think Derry probably have too much, particularly in that final third, and will open them up. And if they were to do that, it only puts them a point behind Rovers. I know they play two games more, but points on the board at this stage of the season are certainly probably more valuable in games in hand. And with the juggling Shamrock Rovers are going to have to do over the next couple of weeks, something could happen. Unlikely, but it could happen. And if that is to be the case, Derry need to win tonight.
Yeah, as I mentioned, Rovers don't play until Sunday evening when they host second bottom at Finn Harps in Talla Stadium. And we will talk about Rovers, Paul, but that fixture congestion and everything that comes with it. In terms of the Bowes manager, I know I tongue-in-cheek any rumours for me, but like Detzer and Trevor could get it for the rest of the season anyway. I know there were a few rumours I heard now, mere speculation, of Dave Rogers perhaps being in the running, perhaps a few managers from over in England. Robbie Keane, I mean, he's doing his badges as well, but like perhaps they don't need to look elsewhere. Same situation with Sligo Rovers. John Russell just stepping up and he was already coaching. You get that bit of a boost and perhaps they can take it on for the rest of the season now.
Derek knows the club inside out, which is vitally important. He was obviously the club captain. He's gone back down into the academy and he's coached there, and now he's obviously involved with the first team. I think if it was to be Derek Pender, it's very important that Trevor Crawley is there, just at that bank of experience of coaching within the league. He was involved with St. Pat's when I was playing there, and he had a really good relationship with Liam Buckley, and they were hugely successful. The style of football was extremely good. Now Bowes are looking to move full time next year, and I believe that clashes with Trevor Crawley's current occupation, and I'm not sure how doable that is. Now I could be wrong, but
yeah.
I'm pretty certain there would be a bit of a clash there, so I'm not sure how that would impact things. I'm not sure how that impacts Trevor Crawley going forward. Maybe they've already worked it out, but it would be a half decent combination. The other names that have been thrown around, like Jim Crawford or Stephen Rice, are they going to
step away from the FAI, I don't know. Jim Crawford was in discussions with the FAI over a possible new contract as well, so will be
which he probably deserves. Performances there have been very good since Stephen Kenny stepped away. So I don't know. I think it's better when you go for somebody who knows the league, because the league is quite a novelty compared to English football. Knowing the players, knowing the opposition, knowing the grounds is vitally important, I feel. So I have a feeling Derek Pender's going to get it, you know.
Okay.
I really do.
Full-time gig for Detzer, no better man. As you mentioned, he does know the club, and they're a proper community club, our Bohemian football club. Speaking of community people, John Kenny is up in the community of Derry at the Ryan McBride Brandywell, because Derry City versus Bohemians is live on RT television. JK, I know Will Patching, Declan Glass were facing late fitness tests for Derry. Have you any team news, and what's the general atmosphere around Derry?
Yeah, game goes ahead as planned. No patching in the side. As you say, they did face late fitness tests, Declan Glass as well, but neither are considered. They have a couple of changes, actually, Terry. Ronan Boyce has come in along with Kieran Cole. They're going to operate as fullbacks. Brandon Cavada is not playing, and Shane McElhenney has also dropped out. Haven't got the Bohemians lineup yet, but Derry hopeful to make it three wins in a row, and they are pushing on to Shamrock Rovers at the moment. In fact, they haven't lost in domestic competition, having lost to Sligo at the Showgrounds last May. They come into this game 4 points behind the lead of Shamrock Rovers, with Rovers in action on Sunday night against Finn Harps. But if they can win tonight, actually, they'll pull to within a point of Rovers, but would have two more games played than Shamrock Rovers, who are in action in Tala on Sunday night. Bohemians have, as you mentioned, the interim team of Derek Pender and Trevor Crawley in charge after the sacking of Keith Long. And they come into the game boosted by that 1-0 win over the Hoops last Friday evening at Dalymount Park. And mention those two changes as well. Hopefully we'll have the Bohemians team pretty shortly. But looking forward to this one. If you want to watch it, it's live on RT2 television. Myself and Pat Fenlon bringing a commentary on the game, which kicks off at 7:45. Also keeping an eye on the other matches as well. Dundalk very much still in the mix as well. And the Shamrock Rovers being busy in all three domestic competitions, the league, the FAI Cup, and also in Europe in the Conference League. The other clubs around will say, OK, we have an outside chance of catching them. It's a tall order, but still, they got to keep winning.
I do have to ask, JK, was there any fear of this match being called off, or was it always going to go ahead? And like, I know there's, what, an hour to kick off now, but like, what is the feeling?
It's not very quiet around here. Usual people are just getting on with it, and I don't think there's any danger of this game being called off. I saw some of the tweets earlier on from Bohemians Football Club before they travelled, said the game was definitely on, and Derby City said the game was definitely on. So I don't think there was any suggestion that this game was going to be called off in the first place.
Okay, good stuff, JK. As you mentioned, live on RT2 television, Pat Fennan and John Kenny on commentary, so do tune in. JK, thank you very much. Dundalk still in the title race, probably should get a victory away to UCD. I said that before, and I think they were held to a draw, Paul, so shows what I know. Drogheda Pats as well. Pat's still chasing Europe, and Kevin Doherty's doing a smashing job at Drogheda. How do you think that one will unfold in Drogheda?
Well, I think Tim Clancy, first and foremost, deserves a hell of a lot of credit, Shane. We've seen in previous campaigns when teams drop out of Europe, that can somewhat impact their league form, and it's been much the opposite for Pats, who probably should have gone through that nice out in Tala. But they're probably the informed team within the league, and you know, he really has them playing an attractive style of football, and he's actually getting the results at the other end of that as well. So I think Pats, particularly with that push for that third spot in European football, this is an important game for them, and I think just with form, momentum, everything working in their favour this moment in time, I think they'll go to Drogheda and win, which isn't an easy thing to do.
Nope.
Drogheda have beaten Shamrock Rovers there, they've beaten Dundalk there this season. It's not an easy place to go, but I just think with the momentum behind them, I think Pats will get the 3 points tonight.
Okay, yeah, nothing more than 3 points for if they do want to stay in the hunt. Final match for you before we take a break, because Jane Mangan's going to be chatting horse racing. Shelburne versus Sligo Rovers in the historic Tolka Park. These sides have met three times before, Shelburne winning twice and Sligo Rovers winning once out west. Shells did have 3 goals disallowed and a bit of a controversial penalty at the end, but how do you see this one unfolding in Tolka Park?
Well, Duff was really pleased with the performance last week in Dundalk against Dundalk at Oriel Park, and I'm sure they'll be looking to build on that this week. But I don't know about you, Shane, like, you'll know, you're probably tracking a lot closer than I am, but it felt like that postponement against Pats halted the momentum that they had built up, and it maybe took,
well, it wasn't a postponement at the start, it was a cancellation until it was reversed due to the disciplinary committee.
Yeah, I'll let you get into that one. But yeah, I don't know, if it maybe feels like they've got back on track again. And I also think, speaking of cancellation and postponements,
yeah,
I think that overturn of the Sligo result will really hurt them. I really do. I think it's going to drain the energy out, because it leaves them now 10 points behind Pats in fourth place, and they're probably, I'm sure there's a number of players in that team probably thinking that season's over to an extent. And I think when you put those two things together, Shell's kind of back on form, Sligo out of European contention, I think Shells will win tonight at Tolka Park, and I'm sure you'll be having your fingers crossed that they do anyway.
I just want all the teams to go well, considering I'm a fan of domestic football, Paul. Yeah. That's all I am. I do want to well wishes to Conor Kane, who suffered a horrific injury. He's out for the rest of the season and perhaps longer as well. It was a really, really nasty one. I know Damien Duff mentioned that in his pre-Sligo comments. So plenty of League of Ireland, as I mentioned, with the Premier League away this weekend. And indeed, Women's National League, Sligo Galway, DLR Waves Athlone, Treaty Bows, Wexford Cork, Shells Piemont, and the League of Ireland First Division, Athlone Wexford, Cove Galway, Treaty Bray, and a Munster Derby. First against third, it is Waterford against Cork. Paul Corry, thank you very much for plenty of association football chat. Stay with us because Jane Mangan is going to join us to preview Champions Weekend. I cannot wait.
RTE 2FM.
Game on.
Racing.
Now, you are very welcome back to Game On. It is great to have your company, and I am in the company of Jane Mangan because Irish Champions Weekend this Saturday and Sunday, where punters can attend an unmissable weekend of world-class racing, fashion and entertainment. Day one is, of course, at Leopardstown Racecourse with five group races, including the Irish Champion Stakes and the Lyra headlines the live entertainment, actually, off the course. And then on day two, the Curragh Racecourse, home to all five Irish Classic races, is the venue for the second day. The Curragh will also play host to the Thoroughbred Trail Parade of Champions, the Young Designer Award. And of course, it is Family Day. So there will be a jam-packed afternoon of children's entertainment on offer with face painters, pet farm, arts and crafts, and plenty more besides. Jane Mangan, how excited are you for Champions Weekend?
That is some introduction, Shane. I will tip my hat to you. And I hope for Families Day on Sunday that the weather forecast doesn't materialise. But yes, we have six Group 1s up for action. And when we say Champions Weekend, and yes, this is the best weekends of flat racing in Ireland, but you need to attract the international horses over and the best jockeys in the world. And this year, fortunately, we have them. This race in 2016, the Irish Champion Stakes, that was the highest rated race in Europe that year. And I think it was maybe a combination of COVID for the last 2 years. We haven't had the real superpowers from Europe. But This year, the Irish Champion Stakes has attracted seven runners. Two of the best three-year-olds in Europe, both from France. We've probably the best three-year-old colt in Ireland and Luxembourg. You've got Alan Kerr from the UK, and Mishriff, the horse who's probably won more prize money than any other horse in the world. He's already accumulated over 11 million in prize money. Can he pick up another $1 million prize here in Dublin? But yeah, that's the one I'm probably most looking forward to, and I'm thinking it might go for export, if I'm honest.
Okay.
I like
when you're honest. That's what
I think the French. I think the French have, they've mapped out this race from a very long way out. I think when Vedeni crossed the line in the Prix de Jockey Club back in May, his trainer said, "I'm going to Dublin. I'm going to the Irish Champion Stakes," and he's the same trainer, Jean-Claude Rouget, who won with Al Manzor in 2016. Onesto, you could argue, was a little bit inconvenienced by the draw. He was definitely unlucky in the running at Chanty in Paris, so it's the rematch for them. We've got the heavyweights in Alan Kerr, Broom and Mishriff, but from what we saw in Luxembourg, he was the big name last year. He was our champion two-year-old. From what we saw last time in the Royal Whip, he'll need to be a different horse to win tomorrow.
Okay, well, it will be interesting to see. And just to plug, of course, you can watch live coverage of Champions Weekend from Leopardstown on Saturday on RT2 and the RT Player from 1:30, and from the Curra on Sunday on RT2 and the RT Player from 1:30.
You can watch me live getting drenched.
There you go.
I love the plug, though. Well done. You're such a professional.
Well, you have to. You know, one RTE, Jane. One RTE. Are you on both days?
Yes, I'm on both days. Ruby's on the anchor tomorrow, so we'll be all kept in line. But I'm taking the reins on Sunday. And that's it's a real treat to go racing these 2 days and have, as I said, Christoph Soumian, who's Hollywood in the saddle.
Yeah.
Like one of the best jockeys internationally. We've got Sir Michael Stout, John Gosden, all the best trainers. Brilliant. Here. And it'll be hard to win.
Okay. Well, we had Dermot Weld actually on during the week. He was chatting to Ruby, and he was in great form. It was actually really, really great chat. If anyone missed that during the week, it is podcasted, so do catch that one.
Was he sweet on Homeless Songs?
Well, speaking of Homeless Songs,
so this is the one we've been waiting so long. We haven't seen her since the 22nd of May. She skipped Royal Ascot. Ground was too hard. She needs the rain, so she's the one doing the rain dance at the moment.
Okay.
And she's the highest rated filly in the race. She's the highest rated three-year-old filly in Europe. But we haven't seen her in quite a long time. And Saffron Beach, Holly Doyle, another box office rider, she's over riding for Jane Chappelheim, this filly winning the Prix Rothschild last time in Deauville. She beat Tenebrism, who obviously reopposes. Agartha's in there. Panama Red lights on, but Homeless Songs has this massive reputation from what we saw in the Irish 1000 Guineas, but now she's going to have to do it against older fillies, something she's never done before.
Okay. And we're expecting rain, are we? It's going to be...
Oh yeah, we're going to get rain. Look, we're Irish. We know how to handle rain. So when we go to the Curra on Sunday, we have four group ones.
Mm.
The Irish Ledger is probably the highlight for me because we have Kyprios, the Ascot Gold Cup winner, the Goodwood Cup winner, and a horse that maybe hasn't got the credit he deserves so far this season. Homeless Songs, twice a winner of the race, is in there. Princess Zoe, she is going to love rain. If it turns up soft or even worse, Tony Mullins is going to be absolutely singing. Princess Zoe, a major chance in that. The 2 2-year-old races, the National Stakes has attracted 6 declarations. Aidan O'Brien seems to have a stranglehold on that race with Hans Anderson and Aesop Fable. But don't write off Johnny Murtagh's Chartash. He ran really well behind Little Big Bear last time, and I think up that extra furlong will suit. The Moigler for the 2-year-old fillies, I think Aidan's Meditate's going to be hard to beat. Charlie and Mark Johnson send over Lakota Sue. Papilio's in there and Eternal Silence, but I do think Meditate is one of the stars of the season. And the Sprint, very big field, 19 declared. For me, the champion sprinter this season is Highfield Princess, so great to have her over because John Quinn has won a Group 1 in France with her. He won the Nunthorpe at York. Can he make it a third Group 1 in a third country? Don't rule out Raisel for Mick Appleby and Jason Watson. And Castle Star is going to be a big price. He's going to love soft ground. You know, these sprinters, it's all about speed, but when the ground gets heavy and gets, it can blunt some horses' pace. Some horses handle it better than others.
Okay. So give me a banker for Saturday and a hidden gem each way shout, and give me a banker for Sunday and a hidden gem each way shout.
My banker is Saffron Beach.
Okay.
In the Matron. And okay, I'm going to go Castle Star at a big price each way. We've only seen him once this year. He went over to York. He was pulled out because the ground was too quick. Everything, all the stars are aligning for him to run a very, very big race at a very big price.
Okay, good stuff. Jane Mangan, as you mentioned, we'll give it one more plug. Champions Weekend, live from Leopardstown on Saturday, RT2, RT Player from 1:30, live from the Curra on Sunday with Jane Mangan in the reins on RT2 and the RT Player from 1:30. Jane Mangan, thank you very much. And not to give any spoilers alert, but I believe you're on another RT television show a bit later on as well.
Yeah, I'm in Dublin for good reason, and I'm going to get into Leopardstown good and early tomorrow. So we'll be on the late a little bit later on, and hopefully we'll say all the right things.
Absolutely. Well, you always do. Jay Mangan, thank you very much. Really looking forward to Champions Weekend. Thank you very much for listening. An action-packed Friday evening. We hope you've kicked off the weekend in perfect fashion on terms of sports. Stay tuned to 2FM because Blodden and Tracy is up next with the official chart show ever from all of the Game On team. Well, it's bye for now.
RTE 2FM.